TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
We will be there. Come with us.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets. A division of Bell Media. TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio here by my colleague, Richard Pollock, and my other colleague, Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to the program.
Hello, Ezra.
Good afternoon, boys. It's beautiful outside. And
you've already made a scene this morning?
Yeah. You caused a ruckus with your arrival already?
No, there's no ruckus.
There's a bit of a ruckus.
You definitely offended at least a half a dozen people with your...
No, what are you
maybe not offended.
About?
Actually, entertained is the word I would use.
Entertained, yeah. People were asking.
People
about
were
people
laughing.
People were offering me their muffins. I'm like, Richie, you takes my muffins.
Yeah.
No, I didn't disturb anybody. It's that's what we do. That's our routine. We go to Starbucks on Pemina before the show. And I was telling a few jokes. Nobody was disturbed.
It was certainly a stand-up comedy routine, and it was more entertaining than last night's performance by the Winnipeg Jets, so you got that going for you.
That was a comedy routine. Comedy of errors.
It was a wide-open game. I wouldn't
Especially
say,
the first period.
I wouldn't say it was a comedy of errors. I mean, this is my take on the game. Obviously, the Jets had a really good opportunity to get at least a point in Vancouver on Thursday night. And yesterday, they got down too early, Richie. They went down 3 goals in the first 14 minutes.
3 goals scored against in the first 13 minutes by a team that averages 2.44 goals a game.
Right. And I mean, in that respect, it was tough. They were behind the eight ball right off the bat. But as far as I was concerned, the lines got all messed up. Before the game started, it was announced on TSN Jets that Dustin Byfuglien wasn't going to play. And it threw everyone off. And it turned out that Dustin Byfuglien did play. But what happened was that they only dressed 11 forwards. And then Thorburn went out in the first period. And really what ended up happening, Richie, is that the lines, they were playing essentially with 3 lines. There was no Mietinen in the lineup because they dressed Flood. So as far as I was concerned, the only line, I mean, the Jets ended up, you know, getting some offense from their top 2 lines. Well, really, 2 guys, Kane and Wheeler.
The Jets were brutal yesterday. I mean, they did have some... You know, times when they looked okay.
I wouldn't say they're brutal.
I would say they're brutal.
I thought their neutral zone play was just awful. I thought there were some good aspects of their offensive play, but their neutral zone play was brutal. You could get through the neutral zone yesterday without doing anything. They weren't playing any kind of system, and they weren't playing their system. Calgary's getting through. Calgary's a slow team with 1 line of scoring. And they were getting...
And that line got 9 points.
On the penalty kill was awful. The penalty kill is pretty bad. They were one thing on the penalty kill, they're letting the other team get the blue line with no resistance whatsoever. Another thing, they got to get guys who can block some shots.
Well, I mean, they have Mark Stewart. He's
No, I'm talking about forwards.
Okay.
Brian Little up the top, first goal. You got to block that shot. Get in the lane and block the shot.
Right.
Pavlik should have the first goal. Okay? Second goal was just a comedy of errors with Ladd, Stewart, Little, Hainsey. Hainsey was flailing around yesterday, jumping, guessing.
Yeah.
Mark Stewart wasn't his best game. But Little, again, you know, they got the backdoor pass there. So you're down 2 right away. Then the third goal was just a terrible play from top to bottom by the GST line and the defenseman. The puck comes up the middle of the ice. Tanner Glass takes an awful angle at the opposing blue line. Tim Stapleton and Jim Slater are too far away from each other. They enter the zone. Slater's kind of roaming around, not moving his feet. Stapleton takes another bad angle to a player. Randy Jones is not moving his feet. Mark, it was 5 guys playing terrible, and GST line has been really valuable for this team in certain ways, but that was an awful play, 3-0 right away.
Right,
so you're not playing neutral zone play well. You're not playing in your defensive zone well. What are you doing well?
I agree with that. In that respect, I can't argue with that those 3 goals, and I made this comment. We were watching the game at the Cheer last night. Well, I was. You guys had other plans because you know you're very busy guys, and all I have to do is honor our sponsors. No, I'm just,
as long as you acknowledge our busyness, we're fine with that. Go on.
Especially the first Richie's analysis is pretty bang on. I don't think that they played brutal. I think that they didn't play well in the defensive zone or the neutral zone. I'll give you that.
No, they're not brutal. I mean,
they say the whole team played brutal.
No, they put a lot of shots on net. And that's good. But it's also easy to put shots on net when you're down 3-0.
Exactly.
Hold on. But just let me say something here. I agree, though, that on that third goal bothered me especially because, well, the second and third goals were rebounds. Iggy's goal was a tip. but it was right in front of the net. It was clearly a winning individual battle. Stajan came in off of a rebound and beat, I believe it was Jones, and then Little, I believe, too.
Or no, on the Slater. Second goal?
On the third goal,
that was Jones and Slater.
Jones and Slater.
Yep.
And the second goal, Iggy kind of
both on moving their feet.
And as far as I'm concerned, we're talking about block shots. Guys, they scored on all three power plays. And the penalty kill hasn't been good, especially on the road.
No.
Just like the power play has been completely better. It's been the best in the league at home. And then on the road, they can't get anything going. But as far as I'm concerned, the block shots, Stewart is always out there. I think, you got to give some credit to Glass and Slater. And, Ladd is they throw out Ladd and Little. Little isn't the most, let's just say that he's not the most physical guy.
Too many pucks get through from the top of from the blue line, and they're not angled correctly. That first shot shouldn't have got through.
Yeah.
You want to go to the fourth goal against quickly? The fourth goal against?
Yeah.
Ladd and Wheeler don't get the puck in deep. It's a far change, meaning that the defenseman has to change in the team's opposing zone.
It's because you're in the second period, so it's the long change.
Tobias Enstrom is changing, and Ron Hainsey's popping on, and instead of getting it deep, which Wheeler did a few times yesterday, Wheeler and Ladd turned the puck over at the blue line. It came the other way, and Hainsey's chasing the whole way, and he's chasing. He takes the wrong man. And then Bufflin does a pretty good job of defending the play, but Hainsey's chasing because they turn the puck over at the blue line, and then Hainsey makes a bad read. Hainsey didn't play well yesterday at all, and the puck bounces out to Tanguy, and they score again. It was a comedy of errors, really, for the goals against. I mean, they're unforced errors for the most part, and that's one thing that you don't like as a coach. You don't like unforced errors, and yesterday was unforced errors. Now they created offense. They got a lot of shots on net. They got some good scoring chances.
Yep.
Wheeler obviously continues to look good.
Yep.
Evander Kane continues to look very good. But at some point in time, this team's got to do something on the road. I mean, it's not easy to win at home, but it's easier. And you get the matchups. You get the home ice advantage. You get the face-off advantage. You get your comfort of your own living arrangements when you're at home, driving to the rink, all that stuff. On the road isn't easy.
Doesn't matter.
Teams win on the road.
Every team plays 41 games. The road is an excuse.
This team is being handed, a chance at the playoffs. Toronto has an unprecedented failure over the past 14 games, getting 5 points in 14 games in this NHL, this day and age. Washington has suspensions with Green. The team's basically quit.
No Backstrom.
Tampa Bay sold the whole team. Okay, and Buffalo is making a little bit of a run here, but they sold. And the Jets can't get road victories or road points.
It's not even victories. If they had been able to squeeze out a point in Vancouver, and Vancouver was the game that you expected it would be a harder of the two games because Vancouver the talent disparity between the Jets and the Canucks is extreme.
Absolutely.
And the Jets played
well.
That
was a good performance against the Vancouver. I was impressed.
Exactly. I was impressed. They played a good. And then they just. To whom does the blame fall for coming out with that flat of a performance?
That's leadership and coaching.
Well, I'll tell you one thing.
Both.
Here's your leader. If your captain's your leader, your captain cannot be taking a cross-checking penalty in the offensive zone in the third period.
By the way,
that
should have been 5 in a game.
I'm sorry?
That should have been 5 in a game.
Yeah, it was a clean cross-check to the guy's face.
Yeah.
It should have been 5 in a game.
And Engblom said on the broadcast that he was lucky to not get a further penalty.
Yeah, I don't know why he didn't. I'm not sure what it takes to get a 5-minute major.
They weren't calling
NHL
much yesterday, by the way.
I'm sorry?
They weren't calling much yesterday.
No.
And that hurt the Jets because Winnipeg, when they were playing well, was taking advantage of Calgary's lack of speed with their own speed.
Right. But, you look at that, and if Andrew Ladd, it's like you can't place the blame on him for the performance. But at some point in time, he has to start taking responsibility
for the offensive zone penalties
he has taken game in and game out this year for the Winnipeg Jets.
A coach will tell you there's no good offensive zone penalty.
There's no reason. There's no harm going the other way.
Especially that one. It wasn't like Giordano was rushing the puck up.
Yeah.
Maybe if you lay a big hit and by coincidence, you might get an elbowing penalty. But, Drew, you're right. Andrew Ladd is the captain of this team. He's been there. He's been to Stanley Cups. He's won Stanley Cups. He's the leader. He has to set an example. You're absolutely right. He shouldn't be taking those penalties. As far as I'm concerned, though, getting back to your question, where does the responsibility lay? It's the players themselves, and the coaching. The matchups weren't good, and I don't think they took advantage. The Flames had, I believe, six or seven regular forwards out of the lineup. They had Sven Barchi, in the lineup, and Richie's right. you have a third period lead. You could have at least got a point there, and they didn't.
In Vancouver, you're
in
talking
Vancouver,
about. Yeah.
And yesterday, they came out, and they took... There was the Mark Flood delay of game penalty, and then there was the Tanner Glass boarding penalty.
Yeah.
And you get burned twice on the power play really early, right there. I mean, you're making things very difficult for yourself, Richie. And from my point of view watching that game, you know, and you're right. When you're down 3-0 on the road... Then you can lay the rubber
then
on
you can,
and
yeah.
you can
then you
yeah.
can shoot the
all the pressures
then, yeah.
all the pressures off you. But
that's right.
as far as I'm
that's
concerned,
right.
they chose yesterday to play a wide open game.
That's right.
And the Jets cannot play those wide open games. Sure, it might work, and it worked earlier on in the season against
even,
the Flyers.
No, even early that the only game that it worked.
Even Calgary can't play that game. Well, just undisciplined penalties.
Right.
You know, unforced errors. Like Mark Flood, like there was pressure on him, but he didn't need to put that puck over the glass.
Mark Flood didn't play after that, by the way.
Interesting. Didn't know that.
He didn't play at all.
Well, you're playing seven defensemen, and then you get him in there.
It's true. He played a minute 49 the entire game.
As far as I'm concerned, there was only two defensemen that I thought played well, and it was Enstrom
again. Enstrom's been playing great lately.
He's been unreal.
And I like how he's joining the rush.
And Grant Clitsam had a good game. And as far as I'm concerned, yeah, Hainsey didn't have a good game. And Stewart didn't have his best game either. But the way they were playing, I mean, time and time again.
Hainsey was bad yesterday.
It's two teams. I don't think that you can just say that the Winnipeg Jets have played well just because they have that home support behind them. That's huge. But they're playing two different styles of hockey. When the Jets are playing well, and they've shown in the second half of the season that they can hold a lead at home. But when they play wide open hockey and they take undisciplined penalities, most of the time they lose. And they've only won 11 games this year on the road.
Another thing. They don't get amazing goaltending, and Pavlik hasn't been great in the past two games. Look what happens.
Right. I thought only maybe two goals were his fault.
I'm not saying
the first goal he should have.
I'm not placing the blame on him, but I'm saying like when he's not playing over his head or maybe at the top level, not over his head, the top level he's capable of.
Yeah.
This team
against
struggles.
Vancouver, he was fantastic, and that's why we thought maybe Chris Mason might go in.
Well, what do you think about the fact they went Pavlik back to back?
You know what? I'm fine with overall at the end of the season. I think they had times over the course of the year so far where they should have used Mason more. I understand now with Noel trying to obviously make a run for it, and you do have a fair amount of time off here.
Well,
I'm fine
you
with Pavlik.
You
guys.
Had 4 days off
and
whatever coming into that game.
In big time
and then you have 5 days off until Wednesday's next game.
And as far as any, you know, Pavlik's a young guy. He's in good shape. You know, conditioning doesn't have any impact. I mean, these guys are athletes. They can play on back-to-back nights. And, you know, I believe there's been 11 games on back-to-back nights. We could talk about how putrid the Jets
Everybody
have been.
Everybody plays back-to-back
nights. Yeah,
exactly.
I don't want to hear it anymore.
That's a cop-out.
Exactly. I don't want to hear about it anymore. You know what? You're professional athletes.
Excuses are for losers.
How many people you go around this room and go around society. Everybody has to play back-to-back nights. They have to work every single day. These guys need to start performing every single game.
Exactly.
It's that simple. It's not, I mean, we're not asking them to do manual labor for 12 hours a day and then go back and play again. You play a game, you do it again 24 hours later. It's not the hardest thing in the world. It's an excuse, and it's done for.
And we've talked about this time and time again. And I mean, the Jets are a young team, one of the youngest teams in the league. And their mentality and their approach on the road is different. And all I can say is that they're an immature group in that sense. I mean, I think that as far as the team goes individually, a lot of these guys are having breakout years because they're giving more responsibility. Blake Wheeler's having his career season.
Been great.
Evander Kane's having his career season.
Yep.
Guys like Tanner Glass. The individual performances have been good. But the game that they bring at home and the confidence they show and their ability to hold leads and play a smart, responsible defensive game, it's not there on the road. And I just think that as a group, they've struggled to bring that level at home to on the road. And, you know, you can point out many things, but it doesn't matter what individual things you point out. That's the reality.
Yesterday against a Calgary team that was ripe for the taking, that can't score many goals, that has lack of speed and seven and all these forward injuries, you have to win or at least get a point out of that game. And the Jets didn't come to play in the first 15 minutes of the game, and that was it.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
That goal at the end was a mail-in goal, and that slap shot, and Kiprusoff shouldn't have let that in. Kiprusoff was great yesterday, but that was it. If you want to come, it takes two stupid penalties, and get down 3-0.
Then it's over. The next 45 minutes of the game were practically useless. I mean, I know they got close, but it doesn't matter. Once you're down 3-0, you've put yourself behind way too far behind the eight ball. And, you know, and it goes to show. It shows in the standings. And it'll show, you know, the Jets don't play again until Wednesday. Jets could very easily be 2-4 or, you know.
Well, right now, they're tied with Washington.
Yeah.
Washington's got a game in hand.
Washington's got two games in hand.
Two games in hand.
They play right now.
And they lose a tiebreaker.
That's right.
So they're actually in ninth. So they need another point because they need to get a point over them.
That's right.
You can't be tied with them because you need more points because they have a regulation win over them. So they're giving up two games in hand to Washington, and you already lose the tiebreaker. So theoretically, Washington's pretty bad. They don't have Green now. But theoretically, if Washington wins two games, the Jets are 5 points out of the playoffs with 13 games remaining?
Yeah. They have 13 games left.
Exactly, yeah. Which is a big mountain to climb. The Capitals are actually in action right now in Boston. We'll keep you updated on that game as we go over the next two-plus hours here. When we come back, we're going to look ahead at the week that's coming up for the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up at the top of the hour, 1 o'clock this afternoon, the Dallas Stars play-by-play man Ralph Strangis is going to join us. And coming up at 2:45 this afternoon from Fox Sports in Los Angeles, Jim Fox is going to join us, talk about the Los Angeles Kings. Richie, good yoga public workout yesterday, I understand?
True. You were at TRX this morning.
I did a little pre-show TRX.
Because Drew goes for the first... I've been doing this for a little while now, a couple weeks, Yoga Public, it's great. But Drew goes yesterday for the first time. I ask him, how was the workout? He says back, what a great shower. It's like a 60-year-old man. The only guy I know, you ask him about the workout. What a great shower. They have a rainforest and...
You know,
a shower is hot water, Drew.
As you're running me right under the bus, let me point out for the record, the first time you went there, what you mentioned to me also was the shower.
Did I?
Yeah. So I'm not the only one. I was affirming your comment, but I mean...
Was it a good workout? Did you have fun? The shower. Oh, the shower.
It's a good workout, though. That's a great workout.
I don't understand why it's named after a dinosaur. Why is it called T-Rex?
T-R-X.
Oh, T-R-X.
T-R-X, okay. Yeah. T-R-X.
Ezzy called it P-R-X for like 2 weeks, and I didn't correct him.
P-R-X? I thought Ezzy called it B-L-T.
Well, I haven't been to a gym in 4.5 years, so I have no idea what yoga is or what calisthenics are. So, no, but... Shelly from the station was good enough to give me some passes, so I'm. You guys are setting the bar right now. You guys are both looking svelte and in shape. I mean, Drew.
You're wearing a T-shirt that has a gigantic piece of meat on it, so you know.
Hey,
and Drew tried to eat that T-shirt during the break.
I'm starving. After a big workout like that, I'm starving. Hey, what can I say?
We're getting into shape here for the beach season's coming up. So it's
Drew's wedding's
coming.
It's
the wedding. I'm getting in shape for the wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's going to be bridesmaids there, guys. You should be in shape also.
But hold on. Okay, so your wedding is in about 5 or 6 weeks.
That's right.
We're going to be going down to Kentucky.
Yeah.
So we're going to get in shape so that we can eat tons at your wedding. Is that pretty much what we're going to do?
There's a lot of
eating at weddings.
There's a lot of eating.
A lot of drinking and eating.
Yeah.
Is there going to be any schmoo tort at the wedding?
No. Lots of pies and cakes, though. There's no torts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like schmoo tort. Anyways, Jets play the Stars on Wednesday. They're off for now the next 5 days. These long breaks are very bizarre in terms of the schedule. You don't usually get 4 days off in the middle towards the end of the season. So the Jets certainly shouldn't be tired. They're well rested.
Yep.
And they start Wednesday night back at MTS Center. Another three games in a row at MTS Center.
Yep.
Starting with the Dallas Stars coming to town on Wednesday. The surprising Dallas Stars, I would say.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Who are currently in the... they're in third in the Western Conference simply because they're leading the Pacific Division.
Yep.
But the similarities between the Pacific Division and the Southeast Division are relatively uncanny.
I disagree.
You disagree, even though,
it's mediocre points-wise, but every team in the Pacific is better than any team in the Southeast.
Fine, but they're not that good. I mean, Dallas...
Bit of an overstatement.
I think every team in the Pacific is better than any team in the Southeast. Dallas, San Jose, LA, Anaheim, Phoenix. I think they're all better than any team in the Southeast.
And Richie, well,
then explain their records as being terrific.
Well, Anaheim had that. Well, they're not terrible.
No, well, I mean, if you compare it to the rest of the conference, you said, I mean, explain why Dallas is leading the division with 79 points. Where if you look at the Central Division, 93.
Well, it's not a Central Division, Drew, but if you're comparing the Southeast and the Pacific, I think it's a different story.
Well, then tell me why the Pacific is struggling.
Well, I mean, a couple of things, Drew. Okay. First off, you have Phoenix has played well this year, obviously. Anaheim had a huge beginning of the season swoon. They obviously, Carlisle lost his job. They've played exceptionally well since that time. LA hasn't been able to score, but they also don't allow any goals. So the teams have flaws. San Jose is better than the record that they have right now. And Dallas has overachieved a bit. But all those teams have guys, you know, aside from Phoenix, really, all those teams have some, you know, pretty good talent up front. Maybe hasn't been scoring, but, I mean, you look at Dallas and J.B. Benn and Mike Ribeiro. Mike Ryder almost has 30 goals this year. And you look at San Jose, still have Couture, Thornton, and Marlowe, all those guys. L.A., I mean, obviously not scoring a lot, but Carter, Richards, and Kopitar. And then you look at, who am I forgetting right now? Phoenix doesn't have much in the way of scoring, but the other team, Anaheim, obviously the top three that they have there, and Timo Solani. So you have top-end talent on these squads. You know, all of them have flaws, but I don't think they're undeserving of. There's going to be two Pacific teams in the playoffs.
So,
I think.
Would you say the reason why the Pacific is not that great points wise is because the teams are just beating up on each other
the entire time? I have to look more.
Hold on. Comparing the Pacific to the Southeast, the Pacific is better this year. Nobody expected what's happened in the Southeast.
There's three teams in the South in the Pacific going to be in the playoffs this year, Drew.
Right.
There might only be one Southeast team.
Richie, what's happened in the Pacific Division? Is Phoenix has been there the whole year. Phoenix has generally been in a playoff spot the whole year. Dallas has gone on a crazy run. They've won 4 in a row and 8 of their last 10, and L.A. can't seem to get it together. San Jose's struggled. Yep. Basically, what's happened is you've had the Sharks that have underachieved, and the Dallas Stars have gotten hot at the right time. I mean, we didn't expect San Jose to be in 8th place right now. I mean, nobody predicted that. And you know, Marty Havlat's been injured, and they've had their struggles. But right now, what's happening is the Dallas Stars have gotten hot at the right time. And yeah, Kari Lehtinen is having a great bounce back year. And I didn't think the Dallas Stars were going to be where they are right now.
Their coach has got to be in the discussion for coach of the year. I mean, you hear about Noel here. Depends on what the Jets do. But if the Jets don't make it and say Dallas does, then the top three coaching-wise would be St. Louis, Ottawa, and Dallas.
Yep. That's right. I mean, Coach Noel, I think, has done a decent job, but he's not in the coach of the year discussion.
If they make the playoffs, he could be, but he's not going to win it over Hitchcock or
Paul McClain.
Yeah,
he's done. Claude Noel has definitely done a very good job with a team in their first year in Winnipeg,
for sure.
And with some of the injuries they've had on defense, definitely. But you know, we're going to have coincidentally two guests that are play by play and color analysts in this division, and really, I mean, the LA Kings. I mean. They can't get it together. I mean, they lost last night to Detroit, and maybe we'll get into the.
Let's
some
ask
games,
about but, LA quickly. Well, and, we and, talked about it, but what's up with Mike Richards?
Mike Richards
has had a
terrible year. Let's be honest. And Andrzej Kopitar hasn't played
been
well.
Brutal too.
Like,
do you think that this is Mike Richards? I mean, let's talk about it. This is the first time in his hockey career he's really faced personal adversity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's affecting his performance? He was run out of Philadelphia. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it.
Yep.
He was run out of town by the Philadelphia Flyers because of his attitude.
Didn't get along with the media, didn't get along with certain guys in the locker room.
Yep. Yeah. Is this the first time? Is he responding poorly in terms of performance on the ice?
Let's be honest. Sorry to interrupt, Drew, but then you go into L.A. and there's talk about Dustin Brown not being captain. They want to make Richards captain. And then there's talk that you bring in Jeff Carter. Well, is it seen as a harmonious locker room if the longtime heart and soul guy like Dustin Brown is questioning whether or not he should be captain?
Never mind questioning whether or not he should be captain. They were talking about trading him at the deadline.
Well, that's
I mean, you know, it seems like it's not we don't know this. We don't know that there's a problem in the dressing room in Los Angeles.
Oh, we don't know. Yeah.
But, you know, if there is, at what point in time do you stare at Mike Richards and say you're gonna get a reputation as a problem child?
Fair question. And unfortunately, he already has that.
Well, it's not unfortunate. I mean, you either bring it upon yourself or you don't.
No, I'm not saying it's unfortunate that he has it. I'm just saying I think he's been a problem.
I think
child
he needs
already.
To look in the mirror.
Probably, but
what is his maturity level like?
Look at what's happened with Mike Richards. He goes from the Eastern Conference, the only team he's ever known, in the Philadelphia Flyers,
and a team that obviously loved him enough to make a long term commitment to him, and then they changed their mind. So something happened there,
right? And he was on a terrific trajectory 2 years ago, and the Flyers got to the finals, and they got very close to winning the Stanley Cup, and then last year things didn't work out. And you're right, it was time for a change there. Paul Holmgren, Bobby Clark, the Philadelphia Flyers decided we're gonna make some trades and go with a different group here. We're gonna bring in a big goalie. And what's happened is
let me ask you this though: what does it say to you about Mike Richards that the Philadelphia Flyers decided to turn the team over to Chris Pronger as a 36, 37-year-old defenseman?
And Giroux and Briere.
Yeah, Giroux and Briere too. But I mean, the rift was between Pronger and Richards and Carter.
Mm-hmm.
what does it say to you that they chose Pronger over the two young guys who are in their 20s?
It means that
Does he not have the right makeup to be a Stanley Cup champion?
I know, well, you say that, Drew. I mean, it's two games away from the final.
So then why did they do? Why do they change everything around?
It's a fair question.
I mean, there's got to be... they don't make these decisions willy-nilly. They, at some point in time, say, look, he's too much of... There's something wrong with the way it works.
I think the stuff we've heard about the parting and the warnings and stuff like that wasn't adhered to.
So what do you chalk that up to? A maturity issue?
How old's Mike Richards now? 2004 draft, 26? Right?
Yeah.
26. I mean, when is he going to mature if he hasn't matured yet?
Exactly. And I don't think it's going to get any better in Los Angeles. And maybe that explains
why less coverage, less pressure in Los Angeles.
Well, poor performance this year,
What are his exact stats?
Here, I'll pull them up.
They're not good. I know. I was looking at them the other day. They're not good. I thought personally Mike Richards would come in there, he'd take a ton of pressure off of Anze Kopitar with defensive zone draws against other teams' best players. They've both been brutal.
14 goals, 20 assists, 34 points in 60 games.
Right.
That's terrible.
That's terrible.
Yeah. That's terrible.
And Richards isn't a 90-point guy, but he's definitely...
60, 70.
He's definitely a 60 or 70-point
guy. You want 65 to 70 from him.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of other things, shorthanded goals and all that stuff, just, you know, playing in every situation. But 34 on pace for 142 points. For another, how many years is left? 10 years. And
when you're the LA Kings and you're fighting,
and I used to like his game. I still like his game, but it's not the same as it was before. I don't know if it's not skinny. He doesn't seem to be moving around as well. I don't know if it's a lack of passion, but he's definitely not as engaged as he once was. And I'm not really sure yet what I would chalk that up to. We'll ask Jimmy Fox. He doesn't seem to be as engaged. You watched him play two, three years ago as he in Philadelphia. And Mike Richards was involved in everything. He was on the power play point. He was on the penalty kill. He was scoring penalty killing goals. He was getting clutch goals. He was blocking shots. He was creating. He was sticking up for teammates. We saw him here in person. Just kind of a... He's kind of apathetic.
Let me ask you this question, and we'll go to break with me asking this question. In 2010, he was a key member of the Canadian Olympic team.
Yeah.
In 2014, is he a member on that team?
Right now... If he's not playing center, he wasn't great with Taves and Morrow. That line was pretty good, but Taves was the better player on that line. It's certainly not a shoe-in now, but we're going to talk about the lineup coming up in a couple of segments.
Let's leave it there. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up at the top of the hour, Dallas Stars play-by-play man Ralph Strangis is going to join us.
Yeah.
Eastern Conference playoff race.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. It's getting...
Don Cox?
I'm sorry?
Is it Don Cox?
Who's Don Cox?
From the show Talk About.
Oh, nice.
I think it was Wayne Cox.
Wayne Cox. That's
yeah,
right.
Nice
thanks.
Reference, though.
Sorry.
I didn't know what you were talking about there. Anyways,
Eastern Conference... Did he do Bumper Stumpers, too?
I thought Supermarket Sweep he did.
That was someone else. But both very good shows.
Yeah, great shows.
Yeah. Very Canadian game shows right there. Anyways, Eastern Conference playoff race getting right into the nitty-gritty. We spoke about let's be honest, the Jets put themselves behind an eight ball with these two losses in back-to-back games. Mm-hmm. Regulation losses is what does it.
Also true.
I mean, you know, it's one thing if you lose in overtime, but it's another thing if you lose in regulation.
I want to say one thing going back to the first segment. And yeah, okay, behind the eight ball, but, I mean... The reality is the Jets have the least amount of games left, and they are on a four-day break. And all that's going to happen now, Drew, is that they're going to fall further down the standings. That's what happens when other teams have games and you've got this four-day break. But still, Richie, you've got five teams right now that are all in a similar position. And Ottawa and New Jersey have separated themselves from Washington there. But Florida lost in a shootout last night. They were smoked by Philadelphia, 5-0.
Florida's terrible.
But you've got still, even with this little losing streak, the Jets are only 3 points out of the Southeast Division lead. And hold on, I'm not, you know, intimating that the Jets are going to, you know, still have a chance at the Southeast Division lead. But you've still got five teams, and as far as I'm concerned, no team looks like they're about to surge. You've essentially got a four-way race for that last eighth and final playoff spot. And right now, you could argue that the one team that where they have maybe the best chance based on the talent level is maybe Tampa. And you know, we're expecting either one of Tampa or Buffalo or both to pass Winnipeg.
These teams are all flawed. These teams are all pretty bad.
After tomorrow, The Caps and the Leafs both play tonight and tomorrow. So after tomorrow, the Caps and the Leafs will have the same number of games played as the Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
And in fact, the Caps play the Leafs tomorrow tomorrow night.
So the Leafs play tonight and then tomorrow.
And so does Washington. Okay. Washington plays tonight and tomorrow. It's actually very difficult.
Caps play. Do they play against each other tomorrow?
I'm sorry. The Caps and the Leafs play each other tomorrow.
Okay.
Which it's a quick turnaround for Toronto. They play 7 o'clock Eastern tonight, and then 5 o'clock Eastern tomorrow.
Drew, I'd like to bring something up here. Last week we had Aaron Ward of TSN on, former Winnipeg Jets draft pick, and we asked him, who does he think in that Eastern Conference is dangerous? Mm-hmm. And who did he say? The Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah. Coming up, they lost a point to Washington in overtime on Thursday.
Yeah.
Like you said, the Lightning do play tonight at home to the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
The Lightning have 8 straight home games coming up. They've got the Hurricanes, Bruins, Leafs, Blues, Sabres, Oilers, and Lightning. And just by pure mathematics, the teams that are behind them, they win 5 of those games. They have a better record than 5 of those teams. So right now, and I'm not jumping on the Tampa Bay Lightning bandwagon and by any means saying that the Jets still don't have a good chance at the playoffs, but
quickly, let me get
it's
in here.
Tough to argue about the Lightning here.
It's not that tough because Washington has two more points.
Let me interrupt quickly with an update in Washington. In Boston, 4 minutes to go in the first period, 2-0 Washington Capitals.
Really?
That's fine.
That's not fine.
It's fine. It's terrible. They got to lose to Boston if the Jets won.
I'm just saying, okay, thanks for the update. I'm not saying it's good for the Jets' playoff hopes. I'm just saying, fine. Okay.
You're getting a little emotional, Ezzy.
You seem a little...
Yeah.
The first period? You're playing the Boston Bruins. The game's not over.
No, not over, but it doesn't help.
We'll see what happens.
The Bruins are up 2-0. That game would be over.
You don't write the Boston Bruins off after a couple goals here. Let's just keep things in perspective here, Drew.
I didn't say anything. I just gave the score.
Oh. Let me get in here for a second. It's amazing to me.
We
should talk about the fact that Tampa's in this race, and I think that's a testament to a couple of things. Obviously, the first and foremost, it's Steven Stamkos's being
torrid pace.
This the best goal scorer in the National Hockey League.
Good word, torrid.
I think another thing that we need to take into account is coaching here, and he doesn't have goaltending. He's got an average defense at best. He's
at
got
best.
No depth at offense. It's worse than average defense. He's got no depth on offense. And Guy Boucher can... Whatever I said there.
That was a mouthful.
Yeah, Guy Boucher can coach as well as anybody. And if I'm starting a team right now, it's a hard decision who I'm picking between Mike Babcock, Dan Bielsma, and Guy Boucher.
I'll tell you who wanted
to me, those are the three best coaches.
Montreal Canadiens wanted Guy
Boucher. That's what Al Strachan said on this program last week, is the guy who should have been Montreal's new head coach is coaching in Tampa right now.
Those are the three. To me, those are the three best coaches in the National Hockey League. And you watch Guy Boucher here. They're down 4-0. They score a goal. They're down 4-1. Guy Boucher doesn't quit. He kept coaching.
Yep.
He had them being creative. They got within a close chance at the end of the game and lost 4-3. He's a creative mind. He's a motivator. And you give him a little more talent. I mean, they have no Lecavalier, broken hand, traded all the team. They have no goaltending. Rolsom got in there the other night. He let in 4 beach balls at once.
Yep.
But when the guy keeps coaching.
But when you've got Steven Stamkos and Marty St. Louis, arguably both top 5 players in the NHL, maybe not St. Louis, but he's a top 10. I love Marty St. Louis. Still got it. I mean, you have a chance every night. And I'm going to have to agree with Aaron Ward. I think the last playoff spot, Washington might be up on the Bruins right now, and things are going to change on a daily basis. I think if the Jets aren't able to put together a good homestand coming up, the one team that will bump the Capitals out will be the Lightning. They've got 8 games coming up at home, including tonight against the Hurricanes, and I think you got to look out for the Lightning.
It's interesting.
I don't disagree, Izzy. I don't disagree because top-end talent is top-end talent. Yep. The Jets just don't have it.
The goaltending, Dwayne Rolson did an awesome job in 2006 with the Oilers. And
even
he's
last year.
He
played well.
He's lost a step.
He's older than Johnny Bauer.
He's lost a step.
By the time the Jets next take to the ice on Wednesday against the Dallas Stars,
yep.
They will... Everybody will be caught up to them with games played, and in fact, the Capitals and the Leafs, the Jets will have a game in hand on them.
Right, and most likely the Jets, when people go to see the Jets on Wednesday, they'll either be in 10th or 11th. They probably won't drop to 12th unless Toronto, I don't even think if Toronto wins all their games, they're 5 points behind the Jets now.
Well, the Leafs could. If they win three in a row, they could.
Right, but it's the Leafs here, Drew. Winning three games in a row in the Leafs, you might as well just paint them as Stanley Cup champions.
Once you hit Wednesday, what you're looking at is you're looking at a 13-game sprint, and all the teams are on a level playing field at that point in time.
Yep.
And you look at the 13 games left, and the Jets are a woefully bad road team.
Yep.
Playing,
Leafs have a better goal differential than Tampa, Buffalo, Winnipeg, and Florida, and Washington.
Yeah,
so you know,
if the Leafs can turn things around now, I think the loss of Joffrey Leupold is too much for them to overcome.
And that's going to be my three things later in the show, Drew. I think that they have a fundamental issue.
More than just Joffrey Leupold. The Leafs were losing four games in a row with Joffrey.
It's Randy Carlyle coming in there and changing everything and changing on the fly.
It's a little too late for that.
But it's not for him because he wants to see who can do what.
Right. And, but as far as their playoff hopes go, I think.
You're not out till you're out, Ezzy. But yeah. I mean, it's getting slim here, especially because they don't have any more regulation. They don't have more regulation wins than any team except for Buffalo. So that makes another point. Every time you're behind in regulation wins, you need another point.
That 1-9-1 stretch in February. So they're killed them.
They're actually 6 points out of eighth.
You look at Washington. I mean, take Washington's schedule going up until Wednesday. So they play Boston right now. They play Toronto tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Then they play the Islanders on Tuesday.
And then they've got the Jets.
Then they got the Jets on Friday.
Yep.
And I mean, there's no, you know,
the Capitals play twice in the next 2 weeks. By the way,
the Jets, the thing the Jets have going for them on that Wednesday game,
Drew, quickly,
is Dallas playing the second half of a back to back.
Okay. Well, yeah. If it was the Jets, they'd lose 6-0. But right. Washington plays tonight and Sunday. And then when do they play again?
They play Tuesday.
Today, Sunday, Tuesday. So Mike Green's back for the Jets game.
That's right.
Yes,
he'll be back for the Jets play. Washington plays here on Friday.
Mike Green's got to keep that elbow down.
I know, boys, but that's a huge...
When was the last time the Jets played Washington with Mike Green in the lineup? Because he's been out for most of the year.
Probably in October or November,
if at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's been a while there. And the Jets very easily could be looking up at a number. It's one thing if you're looking up at one team in front of you.
But
it's a whole separate thing if you're looking up at two or three teams in front of you.
We'll have to check who's in the lineup tonight. It was reported, Richie, that earlier that Dale Hunter was going to scratch one of Joel Ward, Alexander Semin.
No, Semin scored. So
Semin's in the lineup, so I imagine Joel Ward.
He lined
Ward
up on the fourth line yesterday,
Mike,
Semin.
Exactly. He's dropped down. So, I mean, they've got issues. Without Backstrom, they're not a very strong team.
And they're saying that John Erskine and Roman Hamrlick is saying that they don't talk to Dale Hunter.
They haven't spoken to Dale Hunter.
Hamrlick's been a scratch for, I believe, nine games.
That was a bad signing.
Eight or nine games.
We said that wouldn't have happened. You know, in terms of he just doesn't skate as well. So it was weird that they gave him a 2-year deal, too, for $7 million. But in any event, John Erskine is a borderline player. I don't know what the communication is there. That's only one side of the story, Drew. But, I mean, I don't mind Dale Hunter going in and just blowing up everything right now.
Richie,
why not? This team's year after year lays down. And for the opposition, and finally he's going in there, probably put some fight, making them feel a little bit uncomfortable. You know what? Maybe that'll work. But right now, anything they've done for the past few years hasn't. So might as well try it. And he doesn't care. If he's done, he'll go back to London. He'll coach in London. He's the king there, and it's fine. If it works, he'll have the job in the NHL if he wants it.
I don't think he wants it.
Maybe he doesn't. But if I'm him, why not?
If there's one team that the New York Rangers want to play in the first round, it's the Washington Capitals.
Oh, yeah. It'd be out easy.
Well, the one team that nobody wants to play in the first round, if they make it, is the Buffalo Sabres.
That's the only team I think that... And the Jets, because of home ice.
Well, the Jets' home ice is one thing, but, I mean, the Rangers have not been fazed by that so far this year.
And Pavlik, because Tampa, you don't have a goalie.
Yeah. Right.
Toronto, you don't have a goalie. And Washington, you don't know. It's really Winnipeg and Buffalo have two things that can beat you.
Mm-hmm.
Goaltending? Buffalo obviously has offense, too, more offense, but talent-wise. But Winnipeg and Buffalo have goaltending, and they have, Buffalo is scoring, Winnipeg is home ice advantage. So those two things.
Exactly. Any of the other teams you're looking at are pretty, relatively easy, four or five.
I mean, Tampa doesn't have any goaltending. They have no depth. Toronto is in flux right now. Washington seems like they're just quitting and playing on strictly talent. So you get them in a situation where you're imposing your will on them, and they just lay down, like last year against Tampa, like years before. So
it'll be interesting to see. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to deal with the Western Conference playoff race. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David is a lifelong Winnipegger who brings passion and energy to all of his real estate dealings. Get in touch with David at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty. 230-6129, or you can follow him on Twitter at David Carr WPG.
I'm calling David right now. He's not answering the phone. I don't know.
Ezzy, that's because you don't have any, you know, income to purchase a house, though.
No, no, but my... Oh, hold on. My phone's not on.
Oh, that's... I'm sorry. I knew it was something like that. You know, it was close.
You know what song Timmy just played, right?
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, it was...
50 Mission Cap.
I know. I knew that was hip.
So, they haven't scored... So, sorry. You're talking about the Leafs haven't been in won the Stanley Cup since 1967. Does anybody else find it ironic that they've played 67 games and have 67 points?
Are you serious?
Yep.
That's Look right. That's a mathematical fun tidbit right there.
That is a little
My
bit
dad
of a,
would be proud as a former math professor at University of Winnipeg.
Yeah, then we know. Yeah. It's a little bit odd that there would be that update from Boston.
Score.
Another Ezzy prediction, an Ezzy prediction that might be coming true. Boston has tied it up before the end of the first.
Okay,
2-1. Not tied it up. I misspoke. 2-1 Washington. 2-1 Washington.
You misspoke.
Yeah, they scored a goal.
But it's 2-1. I mean, Boston's a good team. They can easily come back in that game. We'll follow it. We'll maybe get Remus to do an update.
I just
the last
did an
hour.
Update.
Yeah, but you know, I like Remus better.
Arguably. Anyways, let's talk about the Western Conference playoff race.
The showers.
The Western Conference playoff race, I mean, you have San Jose's back into a playoff spot after briefly falling out of the playoffs earlier this week.
Yep.
They have games in hand.
San Jose's making the playoffs.
For sure.
They're in eighth spot right now, 75 points. They do have two games in hand on Phoenix and three games in hand on Chicago. And, you know, two games in hand on Calgary and Los Angeles. It wouldn't surprise...
The question to me, really, Drew, I mean, obviously, Dallas could fall out here, but I don't know. I think the question really is, out of Calgary, L.A., Colorado, and Phoenix...
Yeah, that's what it's
going to be. I know San Jose's in the discussion. I don't think that's going to be an issue coming down the stretch. Phoenix, Calgary, L.A., Colorado, who's going to make it? That's tough. All those teams are better than any of the teams trying to make it in the East.
If I was a betting man, I'd say Phoenix, probably.
Would you?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, who would you say?
I mean, Phoenix might be.
Phoenix has been the most consistent of those teams all year long. Phoenix has consistently been in sixth or seventh around there for the entire year.
I still think I would just go by based on most talent here, and I would go by LA. Good goaltending. Talent up front. I don't love their back end right now, but, I mean, you know.
Can't score. Losing Columbus earlier in the week.
Score either though, Drew. I mean,
you know
they lost to Columbus. That's true. That was
lost to the Red Wings last night. Fine, you can lose to the Red Wings.
Actually,
I'm okay with
maybe
that.
Maybe I'll take my LA back because you and I were discussing their schedule yesterday.
Brutal schedule.
I forgot about that. It's brutal. So
you're losing.
I thought
Columbus
about this before. I thought about this before the show, but like Colorado's not going to make it.
You wouldn't think so. What did you see in Colorado when they played here that gave you any indication?
I saw a young upcoming team, but nothing's going to make it now. Ezzy's going to talk about their defense and just three things.
Richie,
but
no, let's be honest. Hold on, I want to cut in here. I think it's a little bit more wide open in the West. I think I agree with you that it's going to be tougher for Colorado. And out of the four teams that we're talking about, sorry, five if you include San Jose,
yeah,
who's only won two of their last 10, but that's totally throwing them.
They also
out,
have two
out
games at hand. Desi.
Exactly.
So they win two games and they're 1 point behind Chicago. We're not even talking about this.
It's wide open. I mean, Calgary, sure, they've gone. They won last night and they're only 1 point back, which is very impressive. But they've got injury issues, and they're a one line team. They've got issues scoring on the bottom two lines. And the LA Kings. I mean, they have whoever goes on a run here. And I mean, I'm talking about four or five wins separates you easily in the next couple weeks. But it's wide open, and you know, Colorado has surprised me definitely by being in it right now. But you have to break down the schedule, and we just mentioned that LA's got it. But I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's no clear cut winner here. Phoenix maybe because they've been in that position the whole year.
Whoever's at the top teams in the Western Conference are salivating to play Phoenix in the first round. Any of the other teams they don't want to play, but Phoenix, they'll play Phoenix any day and gladly take their victory.
Seven times a week and twice on Sunday, is that the saying?
Yeah. That's the expression. I mean, you look at that. You know, nobody wants to play Chicago, obviously.
Although I think Chicago's more flawed than other people may think.
Well, Chicago's got their problems.
And they don't get Taves back, by the way, and that doesn't sound like he's coming back anytime soon.
He started skating. He skated.
Yeah,
spoke
to concussion the media. Issues, though, Drew. I mean,
I know. You never know.
I mean, Crosby's been skating for months. And
Richie, it looks like, you know, Taves is 2 to anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks away. It's looking like he's coming back soon.
I just don't love their team. I think they have a fair amount of holes. I don't think they filled the holes. They have a bunch of guys who are the same to me, and they lack a little bit of grit. And
Johnny Oduya, first star last night.
Yeah, it's true. And he's played well. He's logged some big minutes there after that first period that he had. But at the same time, I just don't think that that's the team. Let's go over LA's schedule coming up here, guys.
LA's schedule is brutal.
So let me read it to you here because it's harder than you'd ever imagine, really. So they played Detroit yesterday and lost. So Detroit only had 14 shots on net, guys. Should mention that.
And they still scored four goals.
And they were down.
I'm still sticking with the Kings in my predictions because I think the other teams are pretty overrated. But this is what they have.
But hang on. When you say LA, you're sticking with LA. You're assuming that is it Phoenix that drops out then?
Because they're only 2 points behind Phoenix, same amount of games played.
You're saying San Jose is a shoe.
San Jose and LA are in, as far as I'm concerned.
So you're saying Phoenix is dropping out.
Not a bold prediction. That's who I think will make it.
Phoenix dropping out or Dallas Phoenix, maybe Phoenix getting caught Phoenix and dropping
drop
out.
Phoenix will drop out.
And Dallas winning that division?
No, I think San Jose wins the division still.
So San Jose comes back, wins that division.
I think Dallas is a little bit of a buffer there.
So you're saying Dallas and LA finish 7th, 8th?
Yeah.
Okay. Go through LA's schedule because it is brutal.
Home to the Red Wings on Tuesday.
No, you're Blackhawks tomorrow.
Sorry, at the Blackhawks tomorrow because Jim's in Chicago. That's right. Home to the Red Wings on Tuesday at LA. It's not much travel. At Anaheim on Friday. Then they play home to the Predators, home to the Sharks, home to the Blues, home to the Bruins. All terrific teams. Now, they're at home. But then they go on the road at Vancouver, at Calgary. Then they get easier at Edmonton, at Minnesota. They play home to Edmonton, home to the Sharks, and then at the Sharks. It's a hard schedule. Aside from the games against Edmonton and Minnesota, and Calgary, really, they have four easy games, and the rest of them are hard.
Yeah. There's only four games there that you would say that they should definitely win. The other games, you probably shouldn't win those games necessarily.
You know, Drew, we talked about Mike Richards earlier and the struggles he's had and Andrei Kopitar. You want a crazy stat. Out of the 15 teams in the Western Conference, only the Minnesota Wild have less goals than the LA Kings. They've got to start scoring goals here. I mean, you talk about the schedule, Richie. You're going up against the Bruins and the Blues and the Canucks, all good defensive teams. I mean, someone's got to step up here. And the two guys that I think immediately are your number two, your top two centers. And I mean, these guys. I mean, yeah, sure, Dustin Brown's a huge part of your offense, but when you got Richards and then you've added Carter. Late last month, I mean, you're a good defensive team. I mean, Jonathan Quick, he's been consistent. He's been there all year. But
it wasn't for Jonathan Quick.
If you want to get into the playoffs, you got to start scoring more than a goal a game. I'm joking. It's really two goals a game, but they've got to start scoring some goals here. And
you're right.
Schedule aside, I think you know the LA Kings are a good enough team that they can overcome that. And I mean, as far as Calgary having a chance, well, Calgary's another team that doesn't score the most goals. And
if Calgary gets in, they're riding. It's only on the back of Mika Kiprusoff.
100%. He was great last night. He's been great all year. Iginla, I mean the top line. Iginla, Tanguy. Jokinen. Glenn Gross has been great, too. Yep. They have four guys. I mean, the Cavaliers.
Glenn Gross is scoring in six games.
I always love Glenn Gross's game. He's fast. He's quick. He gets in. He can put the puck on net.
Yep.
He engages physically. He can kill penalties. He can play the power play.
Underrated player, Glenn Gross.
He really is. And you know what, Ezzy? And they get Camilleri back, and then they have Moss and those guys. You know, they do. They could be a little bit dangerous, but I just don't see. You know, I think Calgary would be happy to face St. Louis, because it's a defensive team and to be who makes less mistakes, but they play against a team like Detroit or Vancouver, and it's not pretty.
No, I mean it doesn't. I mean there's
it's not pretty. They won't touch the puck for periods for 5-6 minutes at a time.
And that's not usually a recipe for success on most nights, at least. Anyways, you'll find out about another 2 weeks to go until we two and a half weeks to go until we get to the end of the regular season. It'll be a stretch drive.
Well, not till then. We got a month left, but.
April. Oh yeah, I guess April 7th, April 8th is the last day. You're right. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. Anyways, when we come back, Ralph Strangis, play-by-play voice of the Dallas Stars, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program. He's the play-by-play voice of the Dallas Stars, who will be in Winnipeg on Wednesday. Ralph Strangis. Ralph, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew, Richard, Ezra, How are you guys?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Good. So are Drew and Richard better than Ezra?
Ralph, they definitely are. I'll tell you that right now from first-hand experience. They're definitely better than Ezra.
It's the only thing I can come up with.
That's pretty good.
That was my hockey pool team name once year, Ralph, so I'm liking it.
Oh, good, yeah, cool. What's going on in Winnipeg? How's the weather?
It's beautiful. Apparently you're going to be here, and it'll be about a nice 50 degrees Fahrenheit when you arrive on Wednesday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Shorts, outdoor swimming pools, the whole nine yards.
Drew's actually wearing a bathing suit in the studio right now.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I'll dress appropriately. I haven't been to Winnipeg when did they leave? 95?
96.
96, yeah.
96.
Yep.
So that would have been the last time I would have been there with the North Star. No, with the Dallas Stars. I guess we were there a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then with Minnesota, I remember they used to have the Boxing Day game, and I was up there. I started in 90, 91. So, I was at that old arena a few times and, always liked going there. So we'll see.
Has Daryl been here with Hockey Night yet?
Has Daryl Ray?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that he has. He's, I don't know, I tried to talk to him this morning, but I think he was drunk. I shouldn't say that. I'm not sure. I know he was in Calgary last week, but everything I've seen I watched him a little bit lately, I've seen what that arena looks like, and I've been hearing sort of, it's funny, like, we hear things, like, be careful, guys. It's a hornet's nest. Be ready to go in there. And some teams have not been ready to go in there. So we're one of the last teams through, I guess.
Yeah.
And it'll be really fun. I really can't wait to see it.
It's quite the experience. Ralph, let's get started if I had said to you at the beginning of the year that the Dallas Stars would be the Pacific Division leaders on March 10th, what would you have said to me?
Well, I'd have probably said not. I'd have probably said no. But last year, they led this division for 79 consecutive days. Think about that. With San Jose and Anaheim and L.A. and Phoenix all making the playoffs last year, Dallas led it for 79 consecutive days, more than half the season. Like, it's kind of weird. So you can't say this is completely out of thin air, but with Brad Richards leaving and with some new pieces to assimilate and with a new head coach and all of that, and then given where they were a month ago, I think a month ago, if you'd have said it to me, I'd have said, there's no chance. No chance. But now, obviously, there is a chance. And it always starts with goaltending. I don't care who you are and how much you got or don't have. If you don't have that, you don't have anything. Mm-hmm. And then they've gotten, they've sort of gotten a little bit simpler, and they compete. I think they realized their predicament, that they couldn't win unless they competed, and that, they were going to have to play hard every night, and they've done that the last little bit here, and it's, here they are. Everybody, and you needed the combination of everybody else falling off a bit, and pretty much everybody else has.
Ralph, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Dallas Stars head coach Glenn Gallitzin, and he's from Manitoba, but can you talk about the job he's done? Because, the Dallas Stars, like you said, even though it's maybe not as surprising that they're leading the division, but, they've really turned their season around, and he's been a huge part of that. But you don't really hear his name as far as, the coach of the year candidates, and really maybe people should start talking about him.
Yeah, I think they should, and I think lots of times it's the West. Just being in the West is a bit of a handicap anyway for NHL awards. We've sort of noticed that over the years, and not even with Dallas. Look, when you miss the playoffs 3 years in a row, and people say, boy, nobody knows about Louis Erickson. Well, we haven't been in the playoffs in 3 years, and we don't have a lot of Sunday afternoon games on NBC, and why would they hear about Louis
Erickson? That's a good point.
So it's the same kind of thing with the coach, too. And Glenn's always had good success in the minors, both in the American Hockey League, the East Coast Hockey League, and sort of the MO of his team was overachieving, doing better than anybody had him pegged for, and making a good late season push to the playoffs. I mean, pretty much every year he's coached, that's what's happened. So he's been talking about it for a long time that, he really fully expected this team to go on a run. He likes what he saw. They've been trying to put some things together. And, you know, he's had to coach through some injuries like they all have. And that first time around the league, you know, it was funny. We were at Edmonton the other day, and now this is my 22nd year doing this. Mm-hmm. So I've been in that building and with playoff series, I don't know, 100 times. And I forgot, Glenn Gullitson was walking in there for the very first time. He had never been to a game in Edmonton until he stands behind the bench. You know, never been to Madison Square Garden before. Never was at Staples Center. So, you know, when you have a guy like that who's making his first trip around, he's learning too as he goes. And I think he's learned some things. He's changed some things. He's adjusted. And, it's all kind of working. But, again, it's Kari's been fantastic, and their backup's been great, Richard Bachman. So I think that's, you know, that's been a big key to it, as it always is.
Ralph, I want to ask you about one of my favorite players to watch. That's Jamie Benn getting better year after year. I mean, I think sometimes people forget that he was a fifth-round draft pick. How good is Jamie Benn, and maybe more importantly, how good can he be?
Jamie Benn's really good. Really, really good. He's probably, and, you know, I was here with Mike for, I was with Mike for 20 years, you know, and I watched him when he was younger and watched him develop and watched what Hitchcock and Gainey did with him and all those things. This kid, Jamie Benn, is, you know, I'm not going to call him Mike Modano yet, and I probably will never call him Mike Modano, but he is as an exciting and individual talent as we've had since Modano.
Yeah.
And he could do things when he decides. He's got another gear that everybody in the ice doesn't seem to have. And when he jumps on a puck and he, you know, decides to try and carve his way through four guys or something, it makes you sit up in your seat and you watch the game differently when Jamie Benn's on the ice. And there have been very few guys, and we've had some really good players here over the years, but there are very few guys like that. This kid is an emerging rock star in the league. And I think in a little higher profile team, he'd already be a rock star. But, you know, again, I think the team is just kind of coming into its own. And there's really no ceiling for this guy who, yeah, everybody missed. He went 129th or something. And especially for North America, especially for a Canadian to get missed by that much, that doesn't usually happen. So, yeah, we've been reaping the benefits.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by the Dallas Stars play-by-play man, Ralph Strangas. Ralph, you mentioned him earlier, how he is underrated and people don't know that much about him. He's Louis Erickson. What makes him so special?
Well, I think Louis benefited greatly by having Yuri Lehtinen around for all those years when Louis was just coming into the league. Yuri was a Selke Trophy winner three times. Yuri was, you know, probably as good a defensive forward and complete hockey player that we've ever had here in Dallas. Mm-hmm. I was funny, and I see Yuri around. He skates with the alumni, and I was talking to Brendan Morrow this morning, and Yuri's been skating with some of the scratches just because he's got nothing else to do. And Brendan, who's coming back tonight, said, you know what, Yuri can still play. There's no doubt in his mind that Yuri let him come back and play. He kept himself in shape and all that, and I say that because Louis's kind of the same guy, and he got to watch that. He's really good on both sides of the puck. Playing with Ribeiro and Ryder, whom you wouldn't say are the best defensive specialists in the league by any stretch, Louis's the guy that sort of cleans up the messes and is defensively responsible. He's never out of position. He's taken three penalties this year, and I've got a beef with all three of them. Like, that's it. The guy doesn't take penalties. I don't know that he ever commits a foul on the ice.
Really?
And he's a guy who can stick 30 goals and lead your team in scoring. So he's a very, very underrated player. And he's a typical quiet Swede. So he's not gonna grab anybody by the media by the throat or anything like that either. He's just a really solid player. And if you pulled other NHL players and GMs and coaches and like that, he'd be on a very short list of top guys that everybody would love to have with him.
Ralph, going back to Michael Ryder, and I think that, you know, Michael Ryder really is a good story. He won the Stanley Cup with the Boston Bruins last year and was very effective on that team, surrounded by very good young talent. And now he's a goal away from a 30-goal season. Just how great of a story has that been, Michael Ryder going to Dallas, getting a new start, and he's thriving?
Yeah, well, you know, in Boston, he wasn't the guy. He wasn't, you know, a top line, top six all the time guy. And I think one of the things that appealed to him about coming here was, you know, we really don't have a lot of top six guys. You know, you take you know, Ben and Ribeiro and Erickson, and you got three spots you need to fill. You know, other guys slot up, but they're not what you would call elite scorers and guys that scare you. And, you know, Brandon doesn't scare you anymore. Ott really isn't a top six guy. Burrish isn't a top six guy. But so I think Ryder saw an opportunity here, and he liked that somebody was actually courting him. I've been really impressed by a couple of things, and one is that when we've had games here over the past month or two, when it's sort of been show up tonight, guys, you know, this is a big one, Phoenix, it's in the division, we need the 2 points. Ryder has been among three or four guys that you say has always been there, and not only just scoring, but you know, but really competing and competing hard. And if there's anybody that really could have an excuse with, as you mentioned, the Stanley Cup last spring, you know, being on, you know, not as good a team as he was on last year and all that stuff, and maybe he was just here to cash a paycheck and whatever, that's not been the case at all. He's been one of our better players. And Joe made some great little value plays over the summer. For the money, he's probably one of the best free agents that anybody signed. You'll get Sheldon Surrey, the same thing, for $1.6 million. We stole him. You know, when you kind of just go down the list of guys that Joe's been able to pluck, he traded Ivan Vishnevsky for Kari Lehtinen.
Yep.
Was that a good trade?
Yeah.
You know, Sean Avery goes on waivers, we have to come up above the salary cap floor, so we just take a shot on Eric Nystrom. I mean, all these things have worked out, so it's been a really interesting year, and Ryder's just another one of those guys that sort of on this island of misfit toys has found a home, and he's been really good.
Mike Ribeiro, Ralph, is a guy that I think a lot of people, including myself for a period of time, seem to always look at what Mike Ribeiro couldn't do. And then it seems like when you really focus on what Mike Ribeiro can do, sometimes it really is something to behold, the pure skill level that he has. He seems to have matured a bit over the past couple of years in his tenure in Dallas. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, Ribby. You know, he's a unique guy all the way around, and he's not without his warts, and he's not without frustrating his coaches and teammates and people. And you know, he's an interesting dude. I love him, and when I watch him play in tough games. If this guy was standing next to you, you know, when it's 50 next week and everybody's out in their swim trunks and T-shirts, this is the last guy you would say is a professional athlete. He doesn't look physically ripped. He's not. There's nothing overwhelmingly powerful about him. He looks almost emaciated. And yet when he gets out there, and especially in tough games, it's funny. Like, they can't seem to knock the puck off his stick. He's stronger than he looks. He scores big goals. He sets up. He doesn't seem to have a panic point with the puck. And yeah, sometimes you question, you know, he doesn't take faceoffs very well. Sometimes he's, you know, you wonder if he's engaged all the time and all of that. But yeah, he's really come along here over the last, you know, I guess we've had him for 6 years now. He's become a very important guy. And sometimes I think you lose your patience and say, well, this is just, you know, the headache's too much or the inconsistent or whatever. But he's a tough guy to replace. I mean, if you ever got rid of him, you'd be looking for him the next day and wishing you still had him. So he's quite an interesting guy. And I doesn't like playing, like, he and the Ducks are kind of, they've had their stuff over the years. So if you want to take a peek tonight, I think he'll be right in the middle of this again tonight. And he doesn't back away. It doesn't matter. So he's really an interesting and unique guy that can do things that I really haven't seen anybody do in a while.
Ralph Strangas, play-by-play voice of the Pacific Division Dallas Stars. You'll be in Winnipeg on Wednesday night. Ralph, thanks for the update. Look forward to seeing you on Wednesday.
Pacific Division leading.
That's right.
That's right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. We'll see you guys on Wednesday night. It'll be fun.
Thanks, Ralph. Take care.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Ralph.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You know this is cake, right?
Yeah.
I do. Thank you. Welcome. I can't eat the song though. If that's
the band is cake. We don't have cake in here.
I know. And thank you.
But there's going to be lots of cake at your wedding.
Exactly. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Ralph Strangas, Dallas Stars play-by-play man,
great
for joining us. Yeah, great guest. If you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
And now, breaking news.
Report from Winnipeg Jets practice. He left the game very early on yesterday.
First period.
Yeah, that's Chris Thorburn, out 3 weeks for the Winnipeg Jets. Lower body injury, Chris Thorburn out for 3 weeks for the Winnipeg Jets.
That's from Dennis Bayak. Who you have a texting relationship with.
We now do, yes. Thank you, Dennis, for sending me over that text. I appreciate that. Chris Thorburn out for 3 weeks. What does this do to the Jets lines, do you suspect?
Well, obviously, I'll step in here, Richie. You know, he's obviously been on the GST line for most of the year, you know, playing on the wing. So obviously that means that someone's going to have to come up from the fourth line. And, you know, Chris Thorburn has, you know, started off, it took him about 40 or 50 games to get his first goal. But, you know, he's got five or six goals now, I believe. And, you know, he's a good physical player. He stands up for his teammates. You know, it's unfortunate because, you know, Tanner Glass, Jim Slater, and Chris Thorburn, Richie, you know, even though, you know, they don't get a lot of goals, you know, they've really gelled together, and it's an energy line. So
they do play well as a unit, as there's a chemistry element. They've thrown on Mietinen and Wellwood on those lines in the past, and just hasn't done much. So that's something to take into consideration. Of all the players to have to replace, so he's probably, and I know the fourth line's been pretty replaceable, but in the top three lines, if you're going to lose anybody, that's the guy to lose because he's the easiest to replace.
Do you move now, is it Mietinen?
You probably move Mietinen to that line because he's the right winger, and then you know, you're going to bring somebody up here, or what do you know? It depends. I mean, again, I don't love what that second line's been doing, so I'm not sure if you want to keep all the lines together. Jets, I mean, that first line's been playing well, but to me, you can shuffle some other stuff around here. So, interesting to see what they do.
You know, I mean, the possibilities are, do you put Eric Fair back in the lineup? Or are you going to call someone up from St. John's? We'll have to wait and see. We haven't heard anything yet, but well, I imagine if he's out 2 to 3 weeks, Richie, I mean, if you don't call someone up, then, you know, there's possibly Fair goes back in the lineup.
Yeah, and you're sure doing how many calls, but if you call somebody up now, and I think you should, to me, I don't know if Eric Fair doesn't really fit well on that line. Eric Fair wasn't performing at a level that warranted him being put into the lineup.
Does Cormier maybe come?
Frankly speaking, maybe. Does Mahachik come in because he's a right winger? I actually thought he played pretty well. Gagnon plays center, but maybe you want to bring him up. There's guys to consider here, but I wouldn't just simply drop Eric Fair in that spot or into the roster period. I don't think he played well enough to warrant being in that role, especially on an energy type line. He does not skate well enough. Thorburn's a pretty good skater. Fair doesn't skate well enough to provide that element on that line.
It'll be interesting to see. You'll see that. Fortunately for the Jets, they have a few days to get that settled and underway and some practice under their belt together.
But all due respect, and I don't mean this in a negative way at all, but if you're missing the playoffs, if you're going to chalk up missing the playoffs to a guy like Chris Thorburn, you have bigger organizational issues.
Nobody's saying that the...
I'm just saying.
So everybody knows.
Fans don't need to get there, you know, to get all excited about it. It's a loss, but it's a replaceable loss.
Well, everybody knows that in an ideal world, the GST line would be their fourth line.
Right.
We've talked about that.
I want to talk about that for a second. I mean, I think that, you know, in hockey, you roll out four forward lines, and yesterday they were down to 10 forwards. But I'm of the belief that you don't want to get too fixated on what the first, second, third, fourth line. And this is what I mean. Obviously, your top line, I mean, and you talk about a coach like Randy Carlyle, and you know, he loves to play that one hard line. I mean, he went to Getzlaff and Perry when they won the cup. He went back to them again and again. A guy like Carlyle will put his horses out.
Tortorella
again and again.
Was doing that too.
And Tortorella,
Tampa.
Right? But yeah, I mean, the GST line, I mean, you guys know that
New Jersey does that.
Much I love the GST line.
There's a reason
line.
Why they're your
but,
best
yeah,
players.
I mean, sure, as far as being the amount of goals they bring, sure, maybe they are a fourth line. But whether you call it the GST line the third or fourth line, they've been a huge part of the Jets this year and given them.
I'm not insulting them.
No, I know you're
that.
Not.
They make a lot of draws in their own zone.
Right.
He's very good at faceoff Slater. They kill penalties.
Yep.
They forecheck well. They play a responsible defensive game. They play against the other team's best players.
And I think you
all those are good
that.
Qualities.
Focus on that, not whether or not. Or a third or fourth line.
Fair enough. But as an organization, if you want to compete with the top teams, you can't be throwing out a line
15 to 10 minutes a game that has a top scorer on it of 14 or 15 points.
Right.
You can't do that to compete in the National Hockey League.
Right. That's right.
And that's just a fact.
Because it doesn't mean that it might work against certain teams, but in a 7-game series, you're going to
all three players bring good qualities.
Yep.
And they can be a solid fourth line. Don't get me wrong. And they all bring good qualities. They're good in the room. They stick up. Those are all qualities that should not go unnoticed.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, when you have a line out there, they can't muster anything in the way of offense.
Yep. You're going to run into problems as far as winning on a nightly basis.
And if you're down 3-0 and you're not trying to shut down as much as you're trying to score, one of the three lines you're rolling out there in a situation where you're trying to create that get back into a game, that can't be one of the three lines you're throwing out there all the time. That's why in a fourth line situation, you can cut it back and not play them as much. You need to be able to have that roster flexibility.
Right.
Now you need to give Chevalier off and company time to assemble that.
Yep.
But if 2 years from now, we've said that before, if 2 years from now this is still your third line,
then you got a bigger problem.
Yeah.
Is it time to see Antropov?
Yes, I think so. I think so. I really do, Drew. I think he's playing hurt and he doesn't skate that well. Having said that, I do think his talent is completely wasted playing with those guys in the front.
Right, and to that point, Nikolai Antropov, he's under contract for one more year. I realize Antropov, he got a goal against Florida at home, and he hasn't played well against Calgary or Vancouver. He didn't play well, I should say.
It's hard to say if he didn't play well. He didn't have any opportunity to do it.
Fair enough. You talk about some of the guys that have had career years, and Antropov, there's more to be desired there. And what Claude Noel has done is he's taken, when Evander Kane came back from his injury, he's taken Antropov off that line. And we should say that Welly Burmy and Kane have done well on the second line. Even though you might want to have Kane on your top line, you can make a strong argument that Kane should be on your top line.
I don't like that line. I love Evander Kane. You guys
they
know
play
that.
Well, though.
Yeah, I love Evander Kane. You guys know that. But that line, to me, Antropov needs to be given a shot there. And I said that for a while. Put him on the right side. Because Burmese shot is doing nothing.
He really hasn't
doing nothing,
done a lot.
He's doing nothing. Give him some kind of insulation and give him a little more talent. Don't get me wrong. Wellwood, Fitzgerald, we've talked about that enough. We don't need to talk about Wellwood anymore. But Antropov needs to get a little bit of a chance. And to be honest, Timmy Stapleton on the fourth line there, on the point, that's a guy whose skill set doesn't add anything really to the team for the most part. They could add a banger in there who hits a little bit more and creates a little bit more on the forecheck than a guy like Timmy Stapleton.
Tim
he's replaceable
been,
on the point.
He's been a power play specialist for the Jets. Why?
What's so special about it? I mean, you have Enstrom, you have
he's
Bufflin.
He's not Timu Solani.
You have Klitsam now with a great point, with a really good one-timer and a good point shot. You can throw out a guy like Hainsey, or you can put another forward on the point, although that hasn't necessarily worked every time they've done that, aside from Stapleton. There are replaceable elements there than the 40 seconds on the second power play unit that you're playing.
Well, Claude Noel, he's become a Claude Noel favorite. And, whether the reason why, that's, Claude Noel likes playing him, so.
Yeah, and then that's true, and that's his prerogative, and it's our prerogative to also question that decision.
That's right.
It's a fun balance.
Yeah, why not? Exactly. That's what we're here to give our opinion.
Let's go to break. Before we do so, Washington 3, Boston 2, under 6 minutes to go in the second period there. So the Bruins did tie it up, and then the Caps retook the lead. 3-2 Washington over Boston. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290.